This is KGN News Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, August 23rd of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's show, Colorado teachers face the largest pay gap in the country compared to their similarly educated professional counterparts. That's according to a new report out from the Economic Policy Institute. So-called forever chemicals may not last forever after all. That story and more on This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. And then it's How on Earth. Today's episode of the KGNU Science Show is part two of our series on the water crisis facing the Colorado River Basin. Guests are attorney Aaron Citron of the Nature Conservancy Colorado chapter and journalist Jared Smith, editor of Freshwater News. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Cameron Henderson will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first, it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Luis Licon.
Colorado State Senator Kevin Priola has switched party affiliations from Republican to Democrat. Priola, who has been a Republican representative for more than 30 years, indicated he no longer wants to be affiliated with the party that promotes electoral conspiracy theories and refuses to condemn the storming of the U.S. Capitol building on January 6th of last year. Priola says that the party switch would not change the way he votes in the state Senate, just the letter next to his name. Details are slowly emerging about a drive-by shooting that killed a 13-year-old boy in Longmont over the weekend. 13-year-old Zay Rosales was playing basketball with his cousin and a friend in Longmont's Kensington Park early Saturday afternoon when someone drove by and discharged a firearm. A police report indicates Rosales was unresponsive when officers arrived on the scene. His 15-year-old cousin was hospitalized with gunshot wounds in the leg and has been since released. Longmont police have arrested a 19-year-old they say was responsible for the shootings. They say they found a gun and bullets in a car they impounded. Thus far, the motive is unclear, but police are encouraging witnesses to come forward with information. Longmont City Council is set to vote on a proclamation that supports a treaty on prohibition of nuclear weapons in today's meeting. Some local groups joining the council include the Colorado Coalition for Prevention of Nuclear War, Rocky Mountain Justice Peace Center, and more. In a press release, Christopher Allred from the Colorado Coalition for Prevention of Nuclear War said, "As U.S. citizens, we do not want trillions of our taxpayer dollars going to weapons of mass destruction." The United States Postal Service, USPS, announced yesterday in a press release that they will roll out a new service called USPS Connect across the U.S., including 44 post offices in Colorado. This service aims to provide same-day delivery for local orders. Some other improvements include next-day regional delivery, easy business support for both customers and business owners, and discounts and special pricing for businesses. In a press release, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy called the new service a pivotal point in our Delivering for America plan. While not explicitly naming Amazon or other large delivery services, USPS Connect seems to mirror fast delivery plans. A full schedule of the program rollout is available on a USPS website. The Aurora City Council voted unanimously to ban some high water usage grasses Monday night, including Kentucky bluegrass, fescue, and ryegrasses. The ordinance also limits grass in residential yards to 500 square feet, or 45% of person's property, whichever is less. Irrigating residential lawns uses 50% of Aurora's water. According to the Sentinel, the policy says eliminating high water use turf in non-functional and aesthetic areas maximizes the amount of available reusable water, a primary goal of Aurora Water. There are some exceptions to the cool weather grass ban, including active recreational areas, commercial areas, and schools. The city will conduct a study in 3 years to evaluate the impact of the ordinance and potential areas to improve upon it. According to the city of Broomfield, two West Nile cases have been confirmed in two residents. This comes on the heels of the first case in Boulder County that was confirmed over the weekend in Longmont. The West Nile virus is spread primarily from mosquitoes to human contact. Some patients might not experience any symptoms, but people who are over the age of 50 and those who have compromised immune systems can develop severe symptoms. There is currently no cure for the West Nile virus. Doctors could only treat symptoms and help patients to recover quickly, but doctors suggest taking these precautionary measures. Drain standing water that could breed mosquitoes, limit outdoor activity during dusk and dawn, and try to wear long sleeves to prevent mosquitoes from biting you. The city of Boulder has planned the closure of 30th Street and Colorado Avenue from September 10th to September 23rd. KGNU Steve Miller has more.
The intersection of 30th Street and Colorado Avenue will be fully closed to vehicle, bicycle, and pedestrian traffic from Saturday, September 10th to Friday, September 23rd. The city is elevating the intersection to allow for the completion of two 30th Street and Colorado Avenue bike and pedestrian underpasses. The closure is part of the ongoing work on the 30th Street and Colorado Underpass project. Crews will be completing the scheduled work that cannot be done with live traffic. As part of the closure, RTD buses will be detoured and there will be some night work needed to complete the project. The project is scheduled for completion in early 2023. You can go to the city's webpage to find a map of construction-free routes for bikers and pedestrians. People driving are recommended to use Arapahoe Avenue, Baseline Road, Foothills Parkway, and 28th Street as alternatives. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
In Boulder today, we're going to see a high of 84 and a low of 56 with a current temperature of 63 degrees. In Fort Collins, there's going to be a high of 88 and a low of 53 with a current temperature of 64 degrees. In Denver, there's going to be a high of 87 and a low of 61 with a current temperature of 66 degrees. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Public servants frequently receive lower pay than workers in the private sector, but for teachers, that pay gap is particularly striking. A new report out from the Economic Policy Institute found that the so-called teacher pay penalty is at an all-time high, with teachers nationwide making an average of 23.5% less than their comparably educated counterparts. But that gap is even higher right here in Colorado. Joining me now to discuss the findings is report author and Economic Policy Institute Research Associate Silvia Allegretto. Thanks for joining me.
It's great to be here.
Start off by translating the lingo for listeners. What do you mean by the phrase teacher pay penalty?
The teacher wage penalty is how much teachers earn relative to their non-teaching professional peers. That's after we take into account differences such as age and education and state of residency. So we have an apples to apples comparison given relative teacher pay compared to other non-teaching peers.
Now, on the flip side of that, what do you mean by the benefits advantage you refer to in your report?
So what we do then is we take into consideration that teachers do have on average a little bit better benefits than other professionals. And so we kind of look to see how much does the teacher pay gap, the wage gap, get mitigated by the benefits. So they do make about 9% better in benefits. So that does help to mitigate the what we call the total compensation gap when you look at the wages versus the differences in the better benefits that teachers get. And we come up with a total compensation penalty of just over 14% that's left after that calculation.
Going back to the wage penalty, your study found that it's at an all-time high nationwide, but that it's especially striking here in Colorado. Just how striking is the disparity?
We estimate teacher wage gaps for each and every state in the country. And it is that Colorado has the distinguished of being the worst teacher pay gap that we have estimated. Teachers in Colorado have the largest weekly wage gap. They earn over a third less than their non-teaching counterparts. That's the biggest state gap that we've estimated in this report.
What's the reason behind the pay gap here?
Well, it's hard to know exactly, but being somebody who lived a long time in Colorado, I know that Colorado has been booming. So wages generally, especially for other professionals, as Colorado has invested in tech and other industries that are paid pretty high wages, so especially in the Denver Boulder corridor, you see the two moving parts here. One is what's happening to the wages of other professionals. We know that has been increasing for quite some time in Colorado. And then what's happening to teacher pay? And we know with the walkouts that occurred in Colorado in 2000, I think around 18 and 19, this was already on the agenda that there was an issue with teacher pay in Colorado. So when you put the two together, what we have is a very, very large and significant weekly wage differential that over a career for somebody in Colorado would be just an enormous sum of money.
And how does this affect retention rates of educators and the overall quality of the public school system?
Well, look, this time of year, every single state is now scurrying to get teachers in the classroom. Every single state has teacher shortages. And we know from surveys that teachers leave the profession, especially after COVID. There's certainly some issues there. We do know that the pay gap is part of the reason why there's difficulties in retaining experienced teachers and attracting new teachers into the profession. The kids in school today, the college kids in school today that are going to figure out what they want to do for their careers, know of these differences. Their career counselors, you know, are very much aware of this. So surveys tell us that, you know, even kids who want to become school teachers, a lot of times even their parents kind of stray them against it because they just think it's going to be very hard, for instance, to pay back these enormous student loans that many of them will have when they know that their pay will likely fall further and further behind.
You mentioned the pandemic. At the start of the pandemic, there was this outpouring of appreciation for teachers. Have you seen any evidence anywhere in the U.S. of this lip service translating into meaningful hikes in wages or working conditions for educators?
Well, there's certainly some reports of this that I've read. It's hard to keep track of school districts and in all the states and what's happening. A lot of it is, you know, disaggregated by districts. Some of it is done more at the state level. It just depends. So there has been some of that, especially, again, on the heels of the massive strikes and walkouts and actions that we saw where teachers and entire communities in support of teachers went on strike, the largest strikes we saw at that time in 30 years. In 2018 and 19. So I think it's on the heels of that and then on COVID that we've seen some more actions to give bonuses, retaining and retention bonuses. That's could help, but that's not going to close these gaps, especially if they are one-time bonuses. We need some serious thought on this, some sustained and large investments in public education generally and in teacher pay more specifically, to start even slowing down this trend, let alone reversing this trend. And look, you have to think money matters. Again, if you're in school thinking about what you want to do with your career, are you going to pick teaching when you know your pay is going to fall so much further behind that of another profession that you may invest your life in?
Teaching is one of those careers that qualifies for public service loan forgiveness. But at what point does it not really even out in the long run when the wages are so low and you're stuck between low wages and a debt that takes sometimes decades to pay off?
Yeah, like so many other people who go to college, teachers also are just burdened by huge amounts of student loan debt. And you couple that with places like Colorado or where I am here in Oakland, California, very high cost of living places. And you just can't afford to be a teacher in these places. That's just another layer of why wage penalty coupled with areas that are high cost of living, how it's just almost impossible to choose teaching as a profession if you're going to try to thrive in those areas.
As someone who has been steeped in this data while authoring this report, I'd like to get your thoughts on what's behind this trend. Why is it accepted to underpay teachers?
The trend is kind of two parts, right? The part is about what's happening with the wages of teachers, and then also what's happening with the wages of other college grads. And also, I think we have to keep in mind that teaching used to be women, almost all women, it still is today. Over 75% of teachers are women. That's the same percentage in 1960. But in 1960, women were a captive labor pool. Educated women were a captive labor pool for teaching because we had huge barriers that women faced that couldn't go into all kinds of other professions, right? And so that's no longer the case. The good news is that over these decades, all kinds of opportunity has opened up for women. And women are going into those other professions. They're doctors and lawyers and dentists and judges and all kinds of working in tech and all kinds of other industries that pay more. So part of it is what we call, you know, the opportunity cost. And that opportunity cost is getting too big and too negative to expect women just to keep teaching. I mean, we certainly don't want to, you know, cut off of their opportunities to make them the best and the brightest go into teaching. Because imagine when you could only really go into nursing and teaching pretty much as a professional back in the day, you did have some of the best and brightest women teaching in the public schools. We have to make it competitive. It should be hard to become a teacher. It should be very highly paid to become a teacher in the United States of America. That's what it really should be like. We are the wealthiest country in the world, and we could do this. It's not wealth, it's will that stands in the way.
Silvia Allegretto, is there anything else that you wanted to add that I didn't touch on with my questions?
If you're a parent, you have to be concerned. There's not enough teachers in your school. That's happening right now to a lot of, you know, in a lot of districts and a lot of schools. And what happens now is a lot of these shortages, like the way when you read it in the press now, it's like the shortages are just, it's kind of tough right now, but they all get taken care of. And that's simply not true. Some of the shortages last, they're large and they last the entire school year, especially like in places like Arizona, they're letting like anybody come in and teach. They're just having warm bodies in the classroom. That can't be an answer.
Well, that's certainly food for thought. My guest today has been Silvia Allegretto, Economic Policy Institute Research Associate and a graduate of CU Boulder. You are listening to The Morning Magazine. We'll be right back after this quick break. For the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
This lightning could power the grid. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
As the crisis in the Colorado River Basin keeps getting worse, the federal government warned 2 months ago that unless the seven states that rely on its water agreed on reductions by mid-August, it would impose cutbacks. But last week, the deadline passed and the feds, well, they didn't do much.
The river basin that serves farmers and 40 million people, including those in Los Angeles, Phoenix, and Denver, is in a long-term drought that's been ratcheted up by climate change. The Southwest is now warmer and drier.
The Bureau of Reclamation wanted the seven states to agree on a plan to reduce their consumption by up to 4 million acre-feet. When they didn't, instead of imposing drastic reductions, the agency announced some additional small cutbacks to Arizona, Nevada, and Mexico, but nothing near the amount it said the states had to self-impose.
There's a divide between the upper basin states of Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and New Mexico, and the lower basin states of California, Arizona, and Nevada. Those in the upper basin say the system is out of balance because the lower basin, California in particular, is taking more than their agreed-upon share and must learn to live with less.
Others say each state in the Colorado River Basin must share in cuts and conservation to save the way of life for all in the system.
The situation remains uncertain, which, according to some, is the fault of the federal government. Over cutbacks was needed yesterday, and every day that passes, the problem gets worse and harder to solve.
Compounds called forever chemicals might not be forever, after a new study shows they can be destroyed.
PFAS compounds have been used in cosmetics, nonstick cookware, and water-repellent fabrics, and they don't break down naturally. They accumulate in the body and are found nearly everywhere and in everyone, posing a threat to human health by increasing risks of cancer, liver damage, and low birth weights.
However, scientists at Northwestern University have found an inexpensive, simple, and effective way to destroy PFAS compounds by mixing them with two cheap reagents and bringing them to a low boil. The process deconstructed the chemicals, leaving only benign parts in just a matter of hours.
There have been successful efforts to filter PFAS compounds out of water, but few methods to dispose of them after their removal. The authors say their technique could provide that solution.
There are about 12,000 types of PFAS compounds, and this study, while promising, only looked at 10 of them. Now the team will try their method on the others.
Through photosynthesis, plants convert sunlight into food. More specifically, they use water, carbon dioxide from the air, and the sun's energy to create sugars as their fuel to grow.
Taking inspiration from nature, researchers at the University of Cambridge have developed floating artificial leaves that can generate clean fuels, which one day could be a sustainable alternative to oil and gas.
Unlike solar panels on a roof that use photovoltaics to generate electricity, their floating leaves are made from a flexible plastic coated with materials that can capture energy from sunlight to produce hydrogen.
And because the leaves could drift on lakes or oceans, they might be a better option than biofuels, which are made from non-food crops that take up a lot of space on land and use significant amounts of water to grow.
Potentially, fuels from floating leaves at sea could also help decarbonize cargo ships, which run on heavy oil and release significant amounts of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere.
The researchers say more work is needed to scale up their 3-inch square prototype, but it's an exciting development that could help turn over a new leaf in clean fuel technology.
And speaking of clean fuel technology, finally this week, could your next car be a home power plant? If it's Ford's new F-150 Lightning electric truck, it might be.
The F-150 Lightning EV with a large battery was designed to power a home for up to 10 days during outages through its bi-directional or two-way charging technology.
And now through a pilot program with Duke Energy in North Carolina, the truck might also supply the grid by offering reduced lease payments to 100 customers who allow the utility to tap into their EV batteries during peak demand.
Known as vehicle-to-grid integration, or V2G, the program would pull energy 3 times a month in winter and summer when demand is highest, and once per month for the rest of the year.
Not only would the program support the grid, but also provide research around V2G technology, which, as Clean Technica writes, could be a massive boost to our renewable energy transition.
Imagine, they say, if utilities didn't have to invest millions in infrastructure, but could instead harness electricity from our cars.
That's it for This Week in Water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
Good morning. Yeah, I just want to give you guys a call and tell you that You know, one of my favorite activities of the week is listening to your Heroes show Saturday morning from 6 to 9, which I'm doing right now, sitting in the parking lot of the church, drinking a cup of coffee and listening to old music. And today, I really appreciate it today because it's really upbeat. Upbeat, good old Western country music. So I wanted to comment on that. Enjoy listening to you guys. And I guess one of the reasons why I really like listening to it is I can understand it for one thing versus a lot of this new country music. I'm 78 years old, a little long in the tooth, and grew up on this kind of music. So it's very much appreciated. Wanted to pass it on to you. Thank you.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Luis Licon, Steve Miller, Alexis Kenyon, Rosanna Longo-Better, Jamie Sudler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up after the news headlines from the BBC.